Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for tuning in to the Big Honker Podcast. Listen, everybody needs to stay caffeinated this time of year. Dirty Duck Coffee. It's the way we start our morning out here every single day with the Missouri Boat Ride Blend. It's a nice pecan flavor, pecan praline. Put it in my thermos with a little dash of peppermint mocha, white chocolate sometimes, you know.
It's like
I'm at Starbucks, Joe.
Get a little fruity on me. I love the Suns Up, Guns Up t-shirts and stuff. They got some cool swag. Check them out at dirtyduckcoffee.com.
Next, we are brought to you by Mr. Corey with Double T British Kennel.
Oh, great dogs.
Corey's got some great dogs out there right now. We ran them last year. Phenomenal dogs. They're great house dogs, great pets, but they also have a ton of drive in the field. So if you're looking for a puppy, a starter dog, finish dog, whatever you need, head over to britlabs.com. Contact Corey over there. Even if you just have a question, you know, something, maybe you're doing your own thing and you need some advice from a professional, Corey's always willing to lend a helping hand.
So. A very good person, great dogs, highly recommend britlabs.com. That's Double T British Kennels.
Next, we're brought to you by Ducks Unlimited. They just finished their Into the Vault sale. They crushed all the records. More money for conservation and wetland habitat. Listen, get involved somehow. Start a chapter, join a chapter, whatever you've got to do. Ducks Unlimited, put your dollars to work, and they're the leader in wetland conservation for a reason. They're great people. We had Jimbo Robinson out here, phenomenal guy. David Schuessler, great, great people, and they do a lot of work on behalf of waterfowl hunters from Texas up into Canada. They've always got our best interests at heart. So
they've got a new thing. Support them. Right now, make a year-end donation to Ducks Unlimited and choose your gift. So check them out at ducks.org.
Next, we're brought to you by Lucky Duck. I have ran the new spinner, the one that's got the black and white wings. And it makes a big difference because ducks can see that black and white flash, like Jeff's been saying for years on this podcast. They can see it better. So we've been doing those. We've had a couple of duck hunts that have gone really, really well. They've got a new rotary out that we've ran a couple times, had some success. They've got kennels that are 5-star crash test rated, so you can feel confident whenever you put your four-legged hunting buddy in the back of your pickup truck in a kennel. If something bad were to happen, they're protected.
Extend your hunting season. Everybody, whenever the waterfowl season's over, go out there and get you a Lucky Duck varmint call and start shooting them coons. Help the turkeys out. Help the quail population out. Shoot the coons.
And that's at luckyduck.com. You can get whatever you need. The new spinner, A-frames, they got a lot of cool stuff for 2023, 2024. So check them out, luckyduck.com. We're also brought to you by Boss Shot Shell. Bismuth is the way to go. Get that lead out of here, and it's a lot better than steel.
And if you want some Boss swag, you need to call the shop, and you can order it direct from them at the shop. And that's at bossshotshells.com. Also, get ready to stock up. Got turkey loads coming. Get the Boss Tom. Turkey season, believe it or not, is only 4 months away.
It's not very far away. I am in love with the War Chief. I mean, it is hard hitting. There a lot of research and development went into this shotgun shell, and it makes a difference out in the field. So, also, we're brought to you by Pacific Calls. You can use our promo code BHP25. Will save you 25% at checkout. That is site wide. Whatever you want, whether you're getting honker calls, spec calls, duck calls, turkey calls. Whatever you're getting, swag, it still applies. 25% off. There's nobody else out there that is going to give you 25% off. I mean, it's a steal, and everybody needs to take advantage of it. PacificCustomCalls.com. You can fill up your shopping cart. Use the promo code at the very end, BHP25, 25% off. They are great guys. You can always get a hold of them if you have any issues. Use the promo code BHP25. We would love to see your lanyard full of Pacific Calls. Next, we are brought to you by Dive Bomb Industries. The hunting has turned here, so I am now running some of the fully flocked specs. And got to tell you, first couple of times, made a difference. Birds were actively trying to get to the fully flocked decoys. I'm a fan. I know what I'm ordering next year. More fully flocked decoys. DiveBombIndustries.com. They're great people over there, and they have been with us since basically the beginning of this show. So head over there.
Good people. Go check it out. Cody Stokes, Asher Tolliver, done a great job. DiveBombIndustries.com.
Next, we're brought to you by Mossberg, the Pro Waterfowl 940. Gun of choice around here at Stanford Hunting Outfitters. It handles the fine sand that we have out here. It plays fits on a lot of guns, but not the Mossberg 940. It's a great gun. Even Maddie shoots it. Maddie Robertson. I mean, how could you not trust him?
I've been shooting the 20 gauge over under and the 28 gauge over under. Great right. guns. Great product. That's Mossberg.com. Check them out. And you can buy them at almost all retail outlets. I'll have Mossberg guns.
Put it to your shoulder. Take it for a test drive. You'll love it. Next, the product of the year. It has changed my dog. Hemp Hill Farm, CBD. Lou will fail a drug test, but he is pain and ache free. He calms down sooner in the morning. He's always had a little bit of an issue with whining. And I'm telling you what, after one or two retrieves, he's hitting his stride. And I also notice whenever he wakes up in the morning, he's not stiff and achy. I give him the recommended dose of CBD before we go out every single morning. And I'm a fan. I really am. They've got roll-on. So that's just for pets. They have a specific pet blend. They also have stuff for humans. They have gummies. They have roll-ons. They have salves. Phenomenal products. If you have the ouchies or something's, you know, got a little lingering issue, head over to Hemp Hill Farm, farm with a PH, .com. And they also have a promo code. BHP saved you 20%, I believe.
And 30% off your very first order today. If you sign up for the Recovery Relief Rest, they get 30% off. I take two of the gummies every night. Well, I take about one to two. Sometimes I take one and a half, sometimes I take one or two. It knocks me out. I go to bed and I get about 6 to 7 hours of solid rest, and I wake up and I'm not sluggish. Doesn't give you the after effects of like taking a Benadryl or a Tylenol PM. It's better for you, and it's Hemp Hill Farm. That's HEMPHILLPHARM.com. Check it out, hemphillfarm.com.
Jeff's a fan. Next, we're brought to you by the Looking Glass Podcast. Head over to their Patreon. Logan and Rebel will be out here next month. They're great guys. Hilarious. All their episodes are 2 hours plus, so it's great for those long road trips. They're a lot of fun to listen to, and they're incredible guys. Really, really fun people to be around. Just go to Patreon, type in the Looking Glass Podcast. It'll all pop up, and then you can do what you need to do. Send over a little bit of money, and you'll have their entire library at your disposal.
Yes, shingear.com. I wear the shin boots. I'm wearing the scout boots right now. I have worn them for 3 months straight, basically. I wear them every day. I wore them in Boston. I wore them in the airport. They're comfortable, just like wearing a set of Nikes without all the politically correctness. At shingear.com. Also brought to you by MLR Graphics in Breckenridge, Texas. It's time for softball season. It's right around the corner, believe it or not. Little League Baseball. If you need your kids to get the best jerseys and equipment you can have, MLR Graphics in Breckenridge, Texas can take care of you. They do all of our shirts, hoodies, caps, everything here. They can take care of you. If you want to outfit your company, whatever you want to do, hats, t-shirts, caps, jackets, the whole thing, it's MLRGraphics.com.
Also, we're brought to you by Alpha Outdoor Specialties, maker of the Stanfield Stool and the Blind Caddy. It has saved my back. The Stanfield Stool has... sitting it every single morning, and it is a dream. We run the Lucky Duck 2x4 blind, so we have four chairs per blind. They are extremely comfortable. So if you want to kick it up a notch in your A-frame or just your regular blind, I suggest you head over to alphaoutdoorspecialties.com, look at the Stanfield Stool, and if you want to stay organized in the blind, get the Blind Caddy. Alpha Outdoor Specialties. Last but not least, we're brought to you by Stanfield Hunting Outfitters. We got a couple dates in January, but not very many. You better get on the horn right now. 940-658-3172. Jeff will answer the call. He'll call you back if he doesn't answer. Send an email, goose@westtex.net. Get some dates.
Nebraska. The last week in Nebraska is duck season. I've got some dates left. If you want to go shoot some birds on the Platte River, holler at me. That's like I said, Andy said, that's stanfieldhunting.com. Or 940-658-3172, and I do answer my own phone.
Thank you so much for being a part of this. It has been another record-setting couple of months. We couldn't do it without you.
God bless you.
Okay, boys and girls, this episode of the podcast, we are joined by Forrest Carpenter. He's a world champion goose caller, and he is a total nice guy. Always a pleasure to talk to him. We're hunting with him today. He's out there in Colorado. He is attempting to shoot a big Canada goose with a bow, and we're in the blind with him for an hour. Maybe it pays off. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know. You have to listen to the end. You got to listen all the way through to see how many he shoots or doesn't shoot. Not going to spoil it. Great guy. Awesome, awesome attitude towards everything in life. He's one of the cool guys in the industry. So here he is, Forrest Carpenter.
I'll sort it out.
All right. Okay. Record and record. Okay, here we go.
And welcome to the Big Honker Podcast, brought to you by Shin Gear. I'm Jeff Stanfield with the world famous Andy Shaver on Meathead Monday.
Yeah, so we'll see Shin Gear at NWTF here in just a couple weeks.
Yes, we will.
Won't be long.
Today's day is brought to you by Dan Campbell, the dumbest man in America. Total screw up.
Yep.
With us today, I guess, are you in Alaska right now? Where are you at?
No, sir. I'm in Colorado.
You're in Colorado. Mr. Forrest Carpenter. World famous Forrest Carpenter.
Trying to shoot a honker with a bow. Look at that.
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. And frankly, I mean, don't get me wrong, season's been tough for everybody, but I've got enough goose in my freezer that if I don't walk home with a full limit, I think I'll be all right.
What is the limit where you are?
Five.
How many have you shot with a bow? I mean, is this a normal deal for you?
I wouldn't say it's normal. It's newer. I didn't get back into archery hunting until last spring. So this year is the first waterfowl season I've been doing it. And honestly, most of it's just practice for turkey season. Last week I went out and killed three and then had another day that was a little slower and killed one. And nothing crazy. I'm not shooting flu-flus and I'm by no means a wonderful archer, but, it's really fun just working, landing birds, and it's just another challenge. It's not like killing them's too easy by any means, because you guys know no matter how many years you do it, it never gets much easier, but it's fun. It's something different, and as much hunting as I do by myself these days, it's just kind of a fun way to kind of mix things up a little bit.
As someone that's a total idiot to bow hunting anyways, you said you're not shooting a flu-flu arrow, you're shooting just a regular arrow?
No. Yep, shooting regular arrows with big expandable broadheads, all that good stuff, and it's my turkey setup. So I'm just making sure I'm dialed in, and so with my schedule, I go up and I spend the summers in Alaska, but I have to leave like mid-May, which is right when I'd really like to be chasing turkeys. So I can't extend my turkey season on the back end, so I try to get it going on the front side. And the easiest way to do that around here is by doing some archery stuff. And both Nebraska and Kansas have early archery seasons. So long way back around. That's why I got back into archery, and I'm enjoying the heck out of it just for what it is. And now it's kind of making me wanting to try some more of the big game stuff that I should have been doing my whole life living in Colorado. It's just a bunch of fun and gets me into the turkeys earlier. And frankly, there's a lot of times where I'd call a shot when they're, 15 yards straight over the top, just floating, where it's kind of fun to watch them do that last 15 yards, and especially the big honkers that we get late in the year, watch them just flutter right on down and set in the spread.
What's your deadly range? Like, where do you need them at? Inside of 20?
I feel just about 100% inside of 20. I think inside of 40, I'm pretty comfortable.
Okay.
And that's where I'm trying to really, I'd like to get very comfortable in that 40-yard range. I feel like if I can hit a honker at 40 yards, whether it's a turkey or something bigger, with fur on it later in the year, I'll probably be all right.
Are you shooting them on, you're not shooting nothing in the air. You try to shoot them on the ground, right?
Yeah, I'm not that bold yet. I'm not that good, frankly.
No, I'm worried about the guy on the other side of the field somewhere when you shoot one in the air, where the hell that arrow goes. How many arrows have you, do you lose a lot of arrows doing this?
You know, I haven't. I shoot with a Luminarok on them, and I really don't even have that bright arrow. They're just black with a white label on them, and they don't go all that far. You know, I don't have one of those super fast new bows. I've got something from 2010, 2011-ish, and, you know, it's still pushing 300 feet a second, but unless I really, you know, arc it up there and sling it, it's not going all that far.
So what's it like hunting by yourself? Because last night duck season ended here and I took my youngest son with me to a pond, and it was so relaxing. Never like, yep. You know, most of the time an afternoon duck hunt here, I'm like, oh shit. My oldest son has the flu, so I was just like, I tell you what, me and the little guy will go out there. We set 7 decoys, 2 spinners, and we just sat on 2 buckets, and I kind of made like a little half-ass blind, and I missed 2 widgeon that came in, and that was that. But I walked away happy.
Yeah. No, man, I love it, honestly. And spend enough time hunting with big groups, especially with all the dive bomb stuff, traveling and hunting, you know, average of 10, 12 guns, hunting sometimes 20, and that's just... You know, it's one thing when you're guiding and you're getting paid to do it. It's another thing when you're kind of spectating, and it's another thing entirely when you're sitting in the middle of the row and you sit up and shoot. But my ears, and they get so set off anymore when I'm hunting with big groups of guys. I mean, heck, I told you here, I got my 410 as backup, and I shoot a lot of small bore stuff just to avoid the big bang because my ears are getting to be real sensitive. So that's one nice perk of doing it alone. The other thing is I don't mind setting a small spread. I think right now I've got, I think it counted like 13 Dave Smiths sitting out there. So not too terribly difficult to set up. And as far as the hide goes, man, that's where you really excel and you can have some unbelievably intimate shoots. Mm-hmm. I mean, today I'm sitting behind a panel blind, which, yeah, I mean, it's so-so, but especially days where I can get out and just wear a ghillie suit and be like in a ditch or just right in the brush, just next to everything, dude, that's awesome. And that's super cool. And that opens up a lot of doors just being by yourself. And the other thing is getting permission. Around my neck of the woods, Front Range of Colorado, everything is leased up from now until eternity. And if it trades hands, usually it doesn't even go to the market. It's just, it just passes hands and everything's leased forever. So if I'm going to go around and knock on doors and get permission, it's really easy to say, I'm just by myself. Just one day I'll take a bow, or I'll take, you know, the smallest shotgun. I won't be any nuisance. And people are a lot more receptive to that than they are like, hey, it'll just be, I don't know, between 6 and 14 of us. You know, it's a little bit different deal. So, yeah, I have fun with it. And, you know, the other thing is I kind of got disenchanted with hunting a little bit after, you know, after doing it with the dive bomb and the traveling stuff that I did. So, the first year after I left dive bomb, I got into basically, I took my lab as many times as I could that year. And, she was 13 at that point. So she was in pretty rough shape. But I just went out and I'd go hang out with her, and that's kind of how it started. And then when she passed away, frankly, it wasn't up until about maybe a month ago that I started wanting to do it with people again.
Really?
So I just kind of, it's been therapeutic, and it's kind of my way to get out, you know, just kind of be close to God and reflect and take some time to decompress from work and all the off season stuff I'm dealing with work. And, you know, it's just a good setup for my mental health overall. Yeah.
How was she at 13? Because my dog is 11 now. Not showing any signs of slowing down, but I'm wondering, or I know, I think it's going to be immediate with him. I think it's going to be yes, and then all of a sudden, no. I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of gray area where I'm like, can he keep going? I think it's going to be a big, oh, definitely not.
Yeah, no, that's how it was with Lila. Early 13, she was great. Like the very end of season when she was, you know, 13 in a couple months, man, she was out there. She was doing long blinds with big honkers. And I don't think you guys ever got to hunt over. No, we didn't get to hunt together with her, but she's never been a dog that was super fast, you know, but she should go anywhere. You know, as soon as she gets a bird, it's kind of the princess trot back, which I was fine with. But, man, it was about 3 months after season. I don't know. I didn't do an autopsy on her and find out just exactly what all went wrong, but she had something going on. She started having seizures. And after her second seizure that we knew about, you know, while we were at home, something happened where she didn't want to open her mouth. And, from that point, she started really going downhill. And, it was right before I left for Alaska. She was still in really good shape. I would have definitely still hunted her through May, but you know, my wife started sending me messages through the summer saying, "Hey, hon, she's acting weird. You know, I just want you to know. So when you get back, you're not just thinking you're going to throw her in the truck and go hunting." And, sure enough, when I got home, she had lost a bunch of weight. She didn't have much weight to begin with. She was like 42 to 45 pounds in her playing weight. And, even off season, she never broke 50. Right. So I got back, she was right at 40, all skin and bones, and you could tell she was losing her balance. Her hips weren't going, but she just didn't have the balance, and she would struggle quite a bit with that. And that was really tough to see. So I guess if I had one piece of advice with it, I'd say document everything you mm-hmm. can. You know, take pictures, videos, spoil the crap out of them. You know, they're just like old people. When they start to go, it's sometimes you wonder if they're even really there. Yeah. So I think I would say that, but you know, hopefully it does go quickly and you know, he's good up until he's not. And then it goes fast because I don't know. I tried to put myself in her shoes and I figured, man, if I'm miserable and I can't hunt and I can't do the things that I love, I mean, spending time with family is great, mm-hmm. but it's really no quality of life. So
yeah, I just really hope that I wake up one day and he's not there. You know, he just curled up in his bed and he's moved on. That's how I hope. Now, you know, the chances of that are probably pretty slim, but
that's how you want Lou to go.
Just wait. I'll wake up one day and he's stiff as a board. I think curled up in bed.
I think it'd be better than a duck blind.
Well, that'd be a little bit traumatic for the people that are with me.
Lou's 11.
Oh, shit. Andy lost his dog.
Is Lou 11?
Yeah, Lou's 11. He turned 11 in December.
Lou, I knew that. I just didn't know if he's 10 or 11. Lou's going to make 14 or 15, I think.
I don't know.
I saw him yesterday. He looks like a four-year-old
yeah,
dog.
Yeah, but I mean, you know how age is. It just happens one day. Like, you know, he's a puppy, and then he's 11, and then you're kind of like, well, how much longer am I going to get out of him? And then, like, everything just piles on at the same time. There's times towards the end of the year we would hunt, like, sheet water. And like the next day, you can tell that he's sore.
Old.
He's sore. Like he's limping around and kind of he gets up and he does that old stretch and you hear him groaning and I'm like, you're getting old on me, bud.
Kind of like when you're on day 87 of, you know, guiding your son straight.
Exactly. Yeah. You kind of get out of bed just to see what hurts. And so I have noticed that this year that some of the sheet water hunts that we did, it took a day for him to bounce back. Luckily, I'm telling you, we got Hemp Hill Farm that sponsors a podcast. They make CBD and they also have a pet blend. And I give that to Lou every day. It's a dropper. And it has made a world of difference. Just in his personality out in the field, he calms down a lot quicker, which is amazing that at 11, he's still ridiculous. And also with the soreness, I have noticed a difference that he bounces back faster with the soreness. It usually like he'll kind of limp around that evening. And then by the next morning, he's kind of got it all worked out and he's rocking and rolling. I've not seen him limp in a field yet. So
nice. That's awesome.
I don't know. Aging. It just sucks, you know, cause he's a part of the family. He was the dog when we started out. Our marriage and our family. That's Lou's place. So
I saw a meme the other day and it said something like basically going towards the fact that the end result of having a pet that you love so much is you're having to put it down.
Yep.
You know, unless something weird happens in between then, that's usually if your dog lives a long time and is part of your family, we just outlive them some by so many, you know, and I've got friends of mine that are on dog number 5 and 6.
Ooh, I don't know if I can do that.
There was a guy in Wichita Falls named Jesse Payne, old-time waterfowl guy, good friend of my dad's. He named his dog, every dog he had was the same. I think it might have been another guy. It might have been Fats McBride. Anyways, every dog he had the same name. And I think like dog's name was Penny, and he was like on Penny number 8 when he was 60 something years old. But he just, every dog he had, he named the same thing over and over and over again. But it is a, it's, that's a very sad conclusion to the end of a great dog.
Well, and I think waterfowl hunters are way closer to their, I'm not, you know, discounting anybody that's just got a housemate, but like, you know, me and that dog have been through the ringer together.
Y'all got a different kind of bond.
You know, it's 4 a.m. truck rides. It's walks to the blind. It's, you know, oh shit, we're hunting in rain and snow and, you know, you're going through ice for me. And, Lou has done way more for me than just your typical house dog that, you know, come get belly scratches twice a day.
As someone that's got a dog like that, I'm offended by this.
Well, be offended.
No, I'm in the same boat. I think it's one of those deals where it's a relationship, right? Doesn't matter if it's four-legged or two-legged, yeah. You know, fly through college breakups, through ups and downs of school, the big, you know, all of my professional baseball stuff, like every major milestone, dating my wife, getting married, having our first kid. I mean, gosh, it's unbelievable the things that dog and I went through. And I think as waterfowlers, especially, you know, when you're guiding and you spend all season with your dog, especially for those 3-4 months out of the year, you spend more time with that dog than you do your family. Yeah. And you can't discount that. You know, there's no way that you can just say, well, it's just a dog. No, that's your best friend. That's not even a coworker. I mean, it's honestly, that was the most enjoyable part of guiding for me, was being able to go out and hang out with Lila and watch her work and know that she was loving every second of it. And, you know, just seeing her be happy and run around and pick birds up. And, man, God, whew, you're going to get me here.
I love the princess walk, because Lou has a little trot whenever he's bringing a bird back. And I'm like, you know, and I was telling some guys, like, well, he's not in a big hurry, is he? And I'm like, well, I mean, think about it. He just did a 200-yard blind for you. He got the reward, and, like, I'm just going to take it from him? Like, of course he wants to savor it for a second.
He's so proud. I mean, that's the thing. I always figured, you know, something that was going through her head the whole way back was just, oh, Dad's going to be so happy. Look what I got. Especially. Bandit or a hybrid or something like that, you could tell she's just like, he's gonna love it.
Has a little extra high little hitch in her step when it's something cool. She's like, Dad's gonna like this.
Exactly. Tail sticks up real high, has that nice little wag.
Yeah. But they're like, man, he's getting old. He's not in a hurry, is he? I'm like, well, fuck. I mean, think about it from your end. Like, if you were to do all that work, are you gonna be in a hurry just to have your owner take it from you? No.
I didn't see back to the blind after we parked trucks.
Right? No.
There's a
savor the flavor.
There's a lot of people too that their hunting dog is basically their best friend. They spend a lot of time, and I deal with that on my end, on the business end of this deal. When I tell those guys, unless you got a private party, you can't bring your dog. I dealt with that early this year with a guy, and he was coming in with a group of hunters, but he didn't book a trip. It was just a big conglomerate of guys, and it was all ones and twos and threes. He goes, well, yeah, but we got a private group, you know. I said, no, you don't. Unless you bring 8 people by yourself with you, you can't bring a dog, because I've seen too many shitty dogs screw up a hunt. You can tell a man his wife has got a fat ass and they won't get mad, but you say something about his dog not being very good and they get their butt hurt.
You're not kidding, man. Well, and it's a safety deal too, from where we're looking at. I don't guide anymore. I'm just a washed up has-been. But for what you guys do, man, I've seen so many safety issues. I mean, I watched a guy almost blow his leg off. I know a guy actually here in Colorado, a friend of mine, who 2 years ago did have his leg blown off by his dog, lost everything from the knee down. And it just stuff that you don't know. You don't hunt over a dog every day and someone just shows up and pulls that out of a kennel. You don't know if it's a field trial champion that hunts 100 days a year that's going to be absolutely rocking, or if it's going to be a dog that whines and screams and breaks and ruins the hunt for everybody. And that really, at the end of the day, the responsibility is on you as the guide to provide at least a good experience, right? I mean, we can't promise limits or anything like that, but it's up to you to make sure the hunt goes well and everyone has a good time. And a good dog can make the hunt, and a bad dog can ruin the best of hunts.
What shocks me is the people that bring dogs that are obviously blind. They can't see someone else that has a dog that actually works. And it just blows my mind that Fifi can't take 5 steps. I had a good friend of mine that had a dog like that. Super good dude, great friend of mine, and he would brag about, she picked up every bird I had, that dog picked up. You walked to every dove. If we shot 30 dove between us, he walked 30 times out there, got within a foot, and then pointed, and the dog picked the bird up and gave it to him. That dog didn't retrieve shit. He retrieved every bird. That dog was terrible. And then dad would get a dog out around him, and the dog would retrieve everything. And I'm thinking, how the hell does he not see this? You know? I mean, how do you not realize that that's a dog that works? Your dog is a pet, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yep. And, as long as you know.
But there's right? So many guys that don't see it. You know, you got a dog. We had a dog this year that was not very good, and Andy had Lou also. I'm watching from the field with binoculars, and I'm like, what the hell is going on out there? And I see this black dog dicking around. I'm like, what? And then I see Lou take off. Well, that guy's dog would go to the bird, sniff it, look around, run around three or four times, and Lou'd pick up seven birds before that guy would have to walk the dog out there. And I thought, man, that guy's got to be embarrassed. But then I realized, he's not embarrassed. He's clueless. He can't see it. He's Helen Keller. He don't have a clue.
Yeah. And again, you know, maybe that's what some guys want. That's their relationship with their dog. And if it doesn't wreck everybody else's day and everyone's cool with it, great. That's awesome. Enjoy it. Man, I'm glad you get to go walk your dog for, you know, 3 months through the spread every day. That's awesome. But don't tell me that, oh, yeah, he's good. He won't break. No, he'll stay in a dog blind. Oh, yeah, no problem.
Yeah.
No. let's be realistic about this.
And, you know, his wife goes, well, how'd Fifi do today? Oh, picked up every bird, mm-hmm. every chicken. She picked up every chicken today. It was great.
That's right.
So
Chase Meadowlarks in the field.
Had a great time.
All that.
Was Colorado always like this? Like you said, pretty much everything is leased, and then it just kind of changes hands. Has it been like that forever?
Most of my life, yeah. I mean, I got into it like 2001, and everything's been that way for that long. I mean, maybe not as high a percentage of the fields in the area. Everything right along I-25 has been, and in the, you know, historical hotspots around Windsor and everything right around city limits of Fort Collins and Loveland, all that stuff's been leased up forever. And most of the good water, we're in a desert out here, not quite like y'all's, but we've got very little water. And what we do have, they have expanded. They've been digging more gravel pits and then filling them with water. So we're getting more and more. But basically anytime there's water available, that's leased up before it's even got water in it. You know, people hear that, they find out that it's going to get filled and it's gone. So, you know, growing up, I hunted a lot of public land because of it. Heck, today I still hunt a bunch of public land right now. I don't know. I don't chase lessers the way I used to, because I hunt by myself and I don't really care to go sit out, you know, 50, 60 dozen decoys at a time anymore. I just assume go hunt ducks early in the year and drive out east to, you know, eastern Colorado along the South Platte and do that stuff. And then when late season, when these big honkers show up, I get some few choice duck hunts and get to go run traffic on big honkers. That's a lot of fun. So it's a very interesting world. And the way that it's all set up with this private land out here, basically the front range is just running traffic all the time. They're going to be in someone's field, but very rarely. Really? Is
it? Is there?
Yeah.
What's it? I mean, what's the agriculture like out there? I mean, are there a lot of agriculture fields that the birds will feed on?
I know you've been coming here. Yep. Oh yeah. Yeah. No, we've got a ton of ag, and that's part of the problem, because everybody wants something, and some people love corn fields, and we've got a whole ton of corn. We've got a pretty good amount of winter wheat, and those are kind of underrated. I think a lot of people don't look at things. I don't know. Based on what I've seen geese do in cold weather, I think they plan things differently. But yeah, we get corn, wheat, a little bit of Milo, right? You have that opportunity to sit there and window shop. A lot of alfalfa, a lot of pastures. And that's something where people look at it and go, man, a goose would never eat that. Well, they might not eat it. They sure will hang out in it. And the visibility in those fields in a place where you're running traffic 90% of the time is pretty tough to beat, especially when there's snow on the ground. If you can get something flat that'll hold snow, man.
Yeah,
if it's white at all, buddy, it's game on.
Yeah, yeah, they'll stick out in a crowd. Yep. Those decoys will.
Yep.
Because it's what have you noticed? Because you've traveled, you got a bird coming.
A few, but they're not really coming. If they show up, I'll let you know.
This will be some really cool footage.
Yeah, I want to see stick a goose. What have you noticed with the migration? You've traveled all over the world. You've gone all the flyways. What have you seen? Because you hunted out here. You guided for Justin for a long time. What have you noticed with the small Canada goose?
I don't see them going as far south as I used to. I think now, again, this is one that'll skew some ideas because it was so mild up until just recently. But we've been shooting 3-4 pound Canadas pretty much all year. They never really left. I mean, our little tiny, like the majority of our hutchies left, and the real little ones kind of passed through, but we had them up until Christmas and they just aren't going as far as they may have at one point. And, man, I don't know. I still think, like, especially with specs and with some of these greater Canadas that we're seeing show up here in Colorado, I think a lot of them move based on the calendar and the, you know, light, moon, and all this other stuff that, you know, people have ideas of. I don't know. I'm not a biologist, but I think all that probably comes into play to some degree. But the birds that migrate because of weather, I think it takes more weather to do it. I think with, you know, better agriculture technology, more irrigation, better crops and more open water up north. I mean, heck, even in Colorado, just in the past 7-8 years, we've kind of developed what they call recharge ponds. And basically they pump water out of the South Platte, pump it up to the edge of the South Platte basin. The draw, basically all they do is they pump it up and they pump it back and it recharges the aquifer. We got a lot of sand out there, so it's moving water. And I just flew the airplane out to go look at a bunch of birds a couple weeks back when it was, you know, 15, 20 below. And, man, there was not a bit of ice out there. The Platte was frozen solid. I mean, literally solid, but, there was nothing frozen about those recharge ponds. It was just wild.
And it's just keeping everything there.
Yep. And they stay there. And there's, you know, after doing some more hunting up north and, you know, all those border states, Montana, Idaho, North Dakota, I mean, there's a lot of open water there. And heck, I got a call from one of my buddies that I used to go hunt Canada with a lot. And he said that he got a call from the farmer that we go and stay with up there. And he said, I hope your season's going well, cause all your birds are right here. They haven't, you know, it's like, and the interesting thing that he said, that kind of surprised me was it's like it was 40, 50 years ago when they would never leave. I thought, huh? So I don't think that this is necessarily new.
Right.
I think it's probably the whole global warming thing. It's just back into some cycle. And because maybe there wasn't as much recorded about waterfowling earlier and there wasn't as much attention brought to it, maybe people didn't know. Maybe people in Canada just didn't communicate this stuff. But, you know, not to say that birds didn't migrate by any means, but I don't know. I'm not seeing the lessers going as far south as they do. I feel like I had one good year of lesser hunting when I was down there with Justin, and that was, what, like 2016, maybe.
Yeah, I feel like we banged them up pretty good in 2016. The one year that I really, really remember that was just across the board, just ridiculously good, was 11 and 12. And then I feel like right there in the middle somewhere, there was like a resurgence, kind of where we're like, oh, fuck, the lessers are back.
Yeah, I feel like there was like a year and a half where it was, I mean, you could hunt lessers or expect to have a good chance at filling a full limit of birds down there. And then they just pieced out and it turned back into a speckle belly show again. And not that the lessers aren't there by any means, right? But it's not what it was. And especially hearing stories from the glory days, you know, I didn't get to experience any of that, but boy, howdy, would I like to have gotten to see some of that.
There were some great days when I first got in this business. Woof. I mean, it was a crazy, but all the birds in Amarillo were here. Most of the birds at Fort Cobb were here. We wintered about 1 million Canada small birds back then. And you know what? A guy, Jamie Holstein, kid worked for me in 98, 99, 2000 probably. He told me, he was from Vermont, And he said, he goes, you got to find something else to do besides waterfowl hunting. I go, why? Because these birds will leave. I said, what do you mean they'll leave? They've been here for 10 years. He goes, they're cycle birds. 10 or 15 years at that point. He said, they're cycle birds. They'll go somewhere and they'll stay there for 10 or 15 years and then something else will happen. Food, water, pressure, whatever it is. And it's going to happen again. We're going to get a rotation of those birds. And we saw a few more Canadas this year than we have in the past, in the last couple of years. And our spec limit's going up, which is fine by me. So I mean, we're good regardless.
What are they taking it to? Are they taking it to three or what?
Five.
Yeah, that's our reaction.
Yeah, we're going to three. Yeah, there's actually a hearing March 28th in Austin. Me and Andy are going to go to. You don't know that yet, but we got to be in Austin March 28th.
But perfect.
But
by the way,
but there's a hearing on March 28th in Austin. But they're going to. I want them to stop at three birds. I want just a three bird dark limit. When I got in the hunting business in 1991, 92, it was a three bird dark limit. That was it. You shoot three Canadas or three specs. And there's days we shot three specs then too. But it was three birds. That's what we need to go. Five is way too many. It's kind of like Oklahoma and Kansas with eight geese. That's absolutely stupid. Should be a five bird limit max.
That's wild. And where it's wild. You're going to run into a lot of pushback because they feel, or a lot of states feel, that you're taking away opportunity for hunters, which is asinine. I mean, you know, as guides, how many extra groups it takes to just kill three or four birds with some people, how many flocks are getting shot into, how much collateral damage, how many birds are being crippled. I mean, man, I think if you lowered the limit across the board, you're going to severely decrease the mortality rate of these birds that, you know, they're, especially in areas they're struggling. You know, you get the really cold weather and the cold snaps, those crippled birds die.
Yeah, it's,
and no one picks them up.
No, it's,
and very few people can towards their limit like they need to. And even if they did, especially in big groups, the lessers or bent the specs in them, you don't know what you hit. If it flies beyond the field edge, you're out there picking up birds and everyone's high-fiving and having a good time, and they're not paying attention to a bird that might be 5 feet lower than the rest of the flock that makes it to water that's just going to die. You know, and well, guys, it makes me wonder, when you add a couple birds to the limit, or especially like Oklahoma, what is eight. It? Eight lessers with two yes. additional specs,
yeah.
something absurd like that. You can. Who needs to go kill 10 geese a day? I'm not saying you shouldn't be able to, but at the same time, do you really need to? You know, I don't know. Maybe it's me because I've gotten to kill a lot of birds and I'm not bloodthirsty like I used to be. But man, I'm telling you, five birds here. If it's just me, okay, sure. That's kind of fun and it's nice to be able to do. But yep, and it doesn't. If I had to stop at three, I wouldn't be disappointed. Honestly, I'd be a little happier. Get out, you'd have more limit hunts. And half the people that are going guided hunts, they just want to hear that word limit. Well, so, you know, that's a tough one to punch noise. It's trying to bite off and chew. You know, there's some talk about up in the Torrington, Wyoming area. They've been kind of fiddling with ideas of increasing the limit and doing some other stuff up there. And I've got a buddy that runs an outfit up there that said, I don't care what they change it to. This is what we're stopping at. So I'll just include it in my preseason email. And if you guys want to come and you guys want to hunt, that's great. This is how we run the program. I have to hunt these same geese. And because of the current weather patterns, we're not seeing our birds leave and we're not getting fresh birds. So this is not only for the benefit of the next group, but the group in front of you is sacrificing so you can have a good hunt as well. And this is the best way that I can manage the local population and do my part. And, you know, just hope that other people kind of follow that. And there's a lot of people that won't, but there might be a few that do. And
yep,
I think that's something, you know, it's tough to do. It's tough to explain. You know, you get people paying money to come in and hunt, and they say, well, I'm paying all this money to come here and kill a bunch of geese. No, you're not paying money to come kill geese. You're paying money to go hunting.
That's right.
All right. I'm trying to show you a good quality experience. And the only way that we can do that is by managing our populations and our hunting habits. You know, it's not our job to go out there. I mean, I'm sure I can only imagine what you guys dealt with bouncing back and forth between Texas and Oklahoma, you know, in client expectations. They pick up their eggs and say, man, we can kill, you know, 10 birds apiece. Wow, we ought to have a 100 bird day with the 10 of us. Mm-hmm. And if you kill 40 birds, it's a big disappointment.
Right.
But you turn around and go hunt in another state where, or Texas, heck, even if you go down there and kill, you know, four out of your five birds and kill 40 birds for 10 guys, then it's a pretty good day. Yep. When in reality, it's the same hunt. It's just what percentage of your limit did you fill? And that's something that always, always really bothered me. You know, people's expectations and how important the word limit is to some folks just wears me out.
Yeah.
Again, like we talked about, it's killing birds isn't what makes it fun, but it's a whole lot of fun when mm-hmm. you do kill birds. And people would really like to go home with some birds. So I put a lot of pressure on myself to try and make things happen as much as you could. But I mean, you guys know Kyle Jones. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that I can't tell you how many times I heard him say it, but just control what you can control. And man, I swear that guy ought to be a high school football coach, because he is on it with the cliches. And like, if there was a 1990s football coach role, I think Kyle should be cast.
Get it.
He's the best. He's the most go getter. And like, no, guys, we can do this. You just need to believe and we can do this. You know, it's a team deal. But man, control what you can control. Yeah. Hide well. Don't overcall. Trust in what you're doing. Scout hard, hide well, and don't screw it up.
That's the main thing. And then, like you said, you got the expectations of the guys. So, you know, they see birds and they're like, well, why is the guy not calling? And yep. you try to explain it, but then I always feel like if I don't set out as many decoys, or if I'm not calling as much, I'm always worried that the client is going to think that I'm lazy.
Yep.
So that's a tricky one. So you can explain it, but in the back of their mind, like if it doesn't work, they're like, well, this asshole just doesn't want to work today.
Yep. Yep. No, and that's where, man, I started taking pictures when I was scouting, and you know, I don't hardly guide at all. I mean, I think I've guided a couple trips this year, but you know, when things get tough, or when I'm going to do like a small spread edge hide, you know, not setting out 40 dozen in the middle of a field kind of deal, I'll take pictures like, hey guys, this is what we're doing. This is what the geese are doing. And we have other options, but this is what we're going to start with. And I feel really confident in it. I know it sounds weird. I know you've hunted with this before. We've used, you know, 20 acres of decoys. Today, we're not going to screw things up. We're going to give them just enough to center up. We're going to hide really well, and we're going to see how it goes. Feel really good about it. I think you should too, but it's a little bit unorthodox compared to what you're used to.
Yeah, it's just, but you're explain right it.
The mind, they're not going to get off it. And best thing about being a guide is you get to be the scapegoat every day. So
lazy bastard.
Will wear it if it doesn't go well, and usually it's in the form of tips, but
monetary value.
That's right. You only hope you get the guys that understand it and that understand that it is hunting and not killing, and that was always the toughest thing. And again, back to, you know, high school cliches for hunting. Yeah, that's one of them. But man, that always wears me out. Oh, we didn't kill any. That was just awful. That's funny. You're laughing your ass off the whole time.
And, right.
You know, seem to be enjoying yourself, but I'm sorry you were miserable while you were, you know, out there with your friends and family and your dog and all this.
Yeah, right.
I'll pray for you, buddy. You've got more issues than what I can help. So, you know, maybe the big man can hook it
right.
up.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. So what's your season like in Alaska? You said it's May to September?
October. So I go up there end of May-ish, and I'll be up there until the middle of October typically. So all the fishing stuff starts around the 10th of June, and I think it's the 8th actually every year. Hold on just a second. Yeah, I gotta
turn your volume down a little.
He sounds a lot better than that, folks.
Yeah, we're getting a little scratchy.
They're terrified of this jet that's flying over. Yeah, luck there. And I've got.
I can hear the jet too.
There's about a dozen in the field. Well, no, they're circling around a little bit. I'll.
You're not going to hear a boom.
if he gets real quiet.
You're getting closer.
Sounds like it. He's getting more excited with him.
That's what I ought to do in Salt Lake City this week.
Bringing her down.
Got a couple strings coming. It's probably blowing like 10, so they're kind of, maybe 15. They're just kind of crawling up here.
Coming your way?
Just let him come.
There he goes.
Yeah, it's looking. Hold on just a second. You're good. Here. Well, that is how it works. I don't know if you can see him there.
No, not really.
No.
It's kind of blurry. But I trust your instincts. You'll go far.
Yeah, there's probably 25. Been around fairly good. Yeah, they're kind of picking up and blowing just enough here that they're kind of fighting it, and they get downwind of you, and it takes them forever to come back up. Really? So, sorry for that that interruption.
No, you're good. I really enjoyed that. This is actually something I've thought about doing, is infiltrating people's blinds and having a conversation with them while they're hunting. And we've done it a couple times with Dave Reese up in Fergus Falls, and It's been cool. I like it. So it's kind of an idea that I've tinkered with. So this actually worked out well. Wish you would have arrowed one, but you know.
I mean, yeah, I wish.
I can call a little bit at him. Get on him.
Oh, yeah. Well.
Let him know.
We'll see what happens here. I got a couple working back a little bit.
What time? What's the temperature there?
Yeah. 26.
So is that typical?
So it's just, yeah. And it's dry, so it's not like 26 in Knox City. It's pretty tolerant. But, there's one big guy who's burning his way, and that could be bad.
He's itching for it.
Oh.
Whoa. Hitting that guy where it hurts. I think his microphone like peaks and it cuts it on his phone, which is why it's a little scratchy.
Or Tanner, wait and use the bow.
Whatever you want to do.
I can't wait to see the mountains. Some people are still shooting ducks for the next 3 days, aren't they?
I'm not sure.
I think duck season's, the federal framework goes through the end of January. I don't know why the states don't give you, take 3 Tuesdays off during November and then let you have all 3 days at the end. Must be getting close.
Sound like more than one.
I got one in spread right here at about 20.
You've got one?
Yeah. I think I might just stand up and stick him with the arrow.
Cool. Give him the old 1-2.
This is cool.
Sounds like a lot of geese.
It'll sound like just one.
They might just be flying over.
Oh, they are right above them.
Oh,
see them?
Yeah, I see them.
It's a big old flock, too.
Yeah, it is.
What are you putting money on here? Goose or forest?
I got forest.
Here he goes.
Boom.
Absolute smoke stacked him at like, I'd have to check, but I bet he's at like 14.
Really?
First time on a podcast, anybody's shot a goose with a bow.
Arrowed a goose.
He is not going anywhere. So that, let him do his thing. There's a lot more geese out here than I expected there to be.
Did he just come right in?
That's the other. Oh, yeah. No, he'd been sitting on the ground for probably 30 seconds. I just wanted to see if the rest of them would circle and hook. And got a chance where they all went out like on their swing. So I stood up and shot that one with the bow. And had I hit the calls, I might have been able to pull some. But I'm actually surprised how many geese are here. Have you guys been losing Canadas lately?
We've actually gained Canadas.
Yeah, we've picked up a lot of birds in the last 10 days.
Yeah, we looked at a field the other day, and it was half and half. So
sweet.
That was another thing that I wondered. You know, so we got so cold right after the new year, and then it was like 2 weeks later. Well, this last week, we've noticed an increase in birds. I wonder if the birds, so that's what, 18 days? I wonder if the birds tried to hold out where they were, seeing that the winter solstice had already happened, and then realized that they couldn't, and then they pushed.
Yeah, maybe.
Because it wasn't immediate. Well, like, it wasn't the front was the 8th, and then we saw birds on the 12th. It was this last week, like the 20th.
When the front was on the 13th, yep. Wasn't it?
I thought it was on the 8th or 9th.
I think it was 13th or 14th. Regardless of whenever it was, the 10th, we'll say. It was a two-week, damn sure 2 weeks. We've picked a ton of cranes up in the last 3 days.
Yes.
A ton.
Nice.
So I don't know. It wasn't front today, birds 3 days later.
Our December crane this week.
Yeah.
Yeah. We haven't really gotten much of a front, but I'm telling you, we've got, here's another group coming. We've had a bunch of geese show up, and we haven't had enough weather to push big geese from Montana or Wyoming.
There they are. Those are small geese.
Is that a side-by-side or an over and under? 410.
Over under.
That's more what four sounds like.
Yeah.
Not that scratchy thing.
You can tell Justin he'll work with him a bunch.
Yeah, Justin showed him everything he knew. He's got a flute on his hand.
Can you blow a flute?
Never tried. I think that's a side-by-side. Unless I'm looking at it weird. No, you're right. It's an over and under. It's got something looking. He's got him. Yep, he's got him. See them.
Yeah, they are.
What I think are geese.
Yeah, those are geese.
Those are geese. It's a nice group.
Right above him, too. Boy, he could pop them with a gun because you know they're a lot closer than they look.
Yeah, camera always adds like 30 yards. Turned them.
I do not have the patience to be a bow hunter.
What?
There they go.
This morning so far.
I saw that. He's picking up the gun.
Now, if he misses, he's going to be really embarrassed. Did you shoot one? Okay, good.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, they keep working. Yeah, sorry. That was a... one of those deals that just keep adding up and adding up and adding up. And, man, kind of just being a pain.
With a 410. Now, I mean, hold on. Now, well, let's not discredit what you just did. You just shot a Canada goose with a 410. So, I mean, you're not sky blasting.
No, definitely not. It's, yeah, I don't know. Just a little bit different game. We only need five. I don't feel too bad about it. That's
so how far was this goose when you shot it?
But the bow gun. Or the gun? The gun had probably 40 right over the top. And they were just hanging right here in this wind and figured, yeah, they keep working, being jerks. Yeah, there's a couple big ones that are looking now. But, yeah, it's one of those deals that, again, I don't really have to kill a whole bunch of geese to have a good day. So I'd just soon work them, but... they were kind of driving me nuts, so I just shoot the top.
Right.
Well, you're living the life, that's for sure. Love very it. Blessed.
That's oh, buddy, that's an understatement. And that goes well beyond just being able to go and hunt. You know, I'm blessed long before that. So.
Well, listen, man, this has really been a lot of fun. I appreciate you taking time and putting us in the blind with you, and I'm glad that we got to see you shoot two birds here. It's been a lot of fun, and I always you're always a really cool guy to talk to. So we really, really appreciate you letting us
in. That
means
a lot. Thank you. I feel the same way about y'all, and it's always a pleasure to get to chat. I miss hanging out. I didn't get to come down to Texas this year, but next time when I come down, I definitely want to hang
absolutely.
Out.
Absolutely.
Spend some time to get to do some of this. Y'all close. So if you can never go to Colorado and you want to come up and do something silly like shoot a goose. Have a good time.
Well, you be safe.
There it is.
There
it is.
Just let me know.
There's the all one.
Right. Flip it over. It's got a band on it. Boy, that'd make $1 million TV show right there.
Is this the arrowed one?
This is the arrowed one.
No band.
We just don't get hardly any bands over here. We're not like those lucky dudes in Wichita and all that stuff that get a bunch of banded birds. Oh, I got big ones.
Well, Forrest, you have a good day, my friend.
We're going to let you go here. That way you can work these without having to worry about us. So thank you so much for this. It's been a pleasure, and hopefully we see you around these parts next season.
Fine. It's always good to chat with you guys. All right.
Thank you. Be safe, my friend.
Bye, Forrest. Be safe in Alaska.
Bye.
We didn't get to talk about any of that.
No, that's an interesting, man. We're getting back on. I want to talk to him before he goes there and talk about the bush pilot. That's got to be some cool stuff. A lot of things to see. All right, we've got this will come out, and then the next one after this will be the last guides roundtable, and we'll close it out with the guides for this year. Had a good season. A lot of blessings, a lot of good times. Look forward to next year. We're going to be very busy. Thank y'all for listening to us. Check out our sponsors. Come by Nashville and see us. See our sponsors at the turkey. If you've never been to turkey, you like to waterfowl hunt, you're not a turkey hunter like me, you would love it. It is an amazing event. All the waterfowl people are there. It's basically a waterfowl show also, so with tons of turkey stuff. Didn't know there was that much turkey stuff. Are you excited about Nashville?
I am very excited. I'm excited to go. I've always wanted to do this. Missed it last year, so I will be there.
You went
there
to Colorado last year
gladly.
For a day.
I hung out
at the Denver airport.
I did. Had a whiskey and a hot dog and flew right back home.
All right. Well, thank y'all for listening to
us. Not this year. Be there. Be in Nashville.
See y'all there. Peace. Goodbye.
Might even sing at the Grand Ole Opry. Love you. Bye. Watch for deer. Check out our sponsors. Go check out Mossberg, Stanfield Outfitters, Alpha Outdoor Specialties, Hemp Hill Farm, use the promo code BHP, Pacific Calls, BHP25 is a promo code there, Double T British Kennels, Ducks Unlimited, Lucky Duck, Looking Glass Podcast, Shin Gear, Dirty Duck Coffee, Dive Bomb Industries, Boss Shot Shells, and MLR Graphics.